Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So it is a football Friday. The Texans play the Broncos on Sunday. But we've already had our appetizer here early in the week, a Thursday night game, which was, look, if you live in the state of Texas and you're not a Cowboy fan, it was a delicious appetizer. It was like the like a nice plate of Southwest egg rolls or
it was mozzarella sticks. I guess it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't a good game. I suppose you could say the Cowboys made the comeback in the fourth quarter. Whatever the hell, it wasn't a good game, but it was a an unexpected outcome, an eagerly anticipated but still unexpected outcome for the Bears to completely put it on the Cowboys.
Games like this, Seth, I don't judge by the margin of victory or loss or the ongoing margin during the game, because it was not, you're right, if you just had no dog in the fight and no emotional attachment, good or bad, to either of the teams, it was not a fun game to watch. I would imagine the Bears took a 24-7 lead and then just kind of cruised to victory. But any game where they're showing Jerry Jones sitting up there in his luxury suite, lamenting life in football and the world, that's entertaining to me when they flash up there. I like that.
I wonder, does he, you know, he does a good show of looking miserable, but do you think he's even miserable in those moments? Because he went on and on about how much he hates losing after the game. Yeah. But it also means he's going to get more attention. He knows he's getting attention here, and there's a part of him.
He's about to get some on this show.
That feels right. And he feels. Now, I was watching this game. I was out to dinner with my brother and some of his business associates last night. My brother's
Cowboys lose 31-24, by the way, to the Bears.
Yeah. So,
in case you're just waking up.
I was watching and not listening to the sound at all. I was just watching from my seat. So when I got home and I re listened to some of the highlights of the game, every single highlight, and, you know, usually it was Chicago Bears highlights, it was Troy Aikman just, I don't want to say it's early in the morning to say bitching, but bitching about the Cowboys and the coaching and the play. And it was really, and I'm not accusing Aikman of fixating too much on the Cowboys. I'm impressed that Aikman, who's always been pretty honest, I think, I don't think personally Aikman shows any bias towards the Cowboys. If anything, I think sometimes he tries hard to show that he's not biased.
Yeah.
But just outright disgust, I think, in his voice about how disappointing this team has been.
Yeah, here's Troy Aikman. To that point, Troy Aikman made what I thought was a pretty interesting point last night, because Jason Garrett is under fire right now, the head coach of the Cowboys. He's going to get fired. They're not making any noise in the postseason. They're 6-7. The Eagles will probably be tied with them after this week. The Eagles play the Giants on Monday night, so they'll both be 6-7 atop just an absolutely wretched NFC East. Troy Aikman made last night on the broadcast what I thought was a fairly decent point, just in terms of firing Jason Garrett right now.
You know, living in Dallas, Joe, I just have to bring it up that there's a lot of discussion as to whether or not Jason should keep his job now if something shouldn't happen during the season. But you have to ask yourself, who on that staff has earned the right to be an interim head coach? I can't think of one guy who's done a good enough job with his position, much less a coordinator, that you would put in that seat.
Well, I mean, Rod Marinelli, who is a very well-respected defensive coordinator.
After 3 weeks, I was told that Kellen Moore was the next hot coaching candidate.
At the very least, Rod Marinelli, if you're talking about interim head coaches, so maybe you do want to consider Kellen Moore, but you also don't want to make him the interim coach and force the issue. Rod Marinelli has been a head coach.
Usually
what you do in an interim coaching situation is say, okay, this guy was a head coach. It's not going to go completely off the rails. Now, it was for the Lions, 2006-ish, I'd say.
Right.
I don't think that was the year they had a miraculous run, right?
I don't think so.
The 3 years that Rod Marinelli spent in Detroit weren't all that special. But now the Rod Marinelli's defense, to Troy's point, has been a huge disappointment. Yeah. And especially last night, where it looked like Trubisky did two things last night. I'll say he did three things. Trubisky ran, which he hadn't been doing for most of the season. As of late, it looks like he's starting to run more, and lo and behold, oh, wow, when the quarterback runs, it makes things easier in the passing game, too. So there's that. Two, I thought that Nagy schemed him into some good looks. I think some of those third downs were pretty easy, so I'll credit Matt Nagy. But that's at the expense of Rod Marinelli's defense. Rod Marinelli's defense is supposed to be, hey, we're simple and we play fast. Ah, you looked pretty bad out there a few times, and you have all season. And then three, and this is important, because Texans fans can appreciate this. With Trubisky, there's a touch of the Fitzpatrick right now. There's a touch of the, wow, look at that tight window throw into quadruple coverage. What an impressive throw. Yeah, this week. Next week, it's four interceptions.
It's not sustainable.
Right. Fitzpatrick has these games where he looks absolutely brilliant, and then he'll play the exact same game the next week, yeah, but all those high-risk throws end up being picks.
He's bisque magic.
Just, yeah, but I bisque magic. Well, so what do you think of a Trubisky, though? At least I like this version of him where at least he's letting loose. At least he's going for it, you know, and maybe he can dial it back in at some point.
Yeah.
But I predict a multiple interception game in his future very, very shortly.
Packers, Chiefs, Vikings, the last three games. Three good teams. I don't know if they're great defenses. The Vikings are the best defense. Yeah, the Vikings are the best defense out of those three. So
if Trubisky decides to just keep running, he might run for 150 yards versus the Chiefs.
Yeah. That was a nice touchdown run that he had last night. So there was a game. The final score was very deceptive. It was 31-24. After the game, Jerry Jones not happy at all with his football team.
Chicago took it to us. We won't be going anywhere until we win a football game. They played us well enough tonight to deserve to win the football game. We did all of the things that you can do that cause you to lose football games in the game. So that's where it is. Until we can get over here and we'll line up against the Rams, until we can win a football game, I don't care what kind of contention we're in, we've got to start playing and winning a football game so that we can be able to play better than we play tonight.
What is it important to do with a football game?
You're supposed to win a football game.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, there are 16 football games each weekend, and the goal is to win the football game.
But how do you go further in the NFL?
You win football games.
Oh, okay.
Games.
Yeah. I wasn't quite clear on
that. Were you not listening
yet
to Jerry Jones?
My God. I was stuck at a bar with him.
If you were at a bar and there was a drinking game, and you had to drink every time he said, win a football game.
You know when you're talking to somebody and they're like in their ninth Johnny Walker in, and they keep saying the same thing over and over again?
Yeah.
A little bit like that.
Yeah. So you think maybe, well.
No, he wasn't slurring at all, and he wasn't as happy goofy Jerry, but it was after a loss.
No, but right after that little cut, he goes, and that's it, I'm not going to talk anymore. And then of course people start asking questions and he keeps talking. The very first question was, hey Jerry, is it going backwards?
This leveled out here. It's losing. So I'm not trying to be funny here, but the point is that we've got to win a football game. I don't care what the standings are, what the numbers are. We had thought that we could come up here and play a really fine football game team. I mean, a good team, play a fine football game, and get our act where we're starting to look like a team that could, if we buy a slim chance, get in the playoffs where we could win. We can't do that until we play and start winning the football games, and we've got three more to play. When we do that, we can go. That's it. I'm not going to answer why I think or saying what I'm saying.
I don't think I've ever heard the main objective of sports summarized quite so succinctly as with Jerry Jones explaining to me that it's. The point is to win the football game.
If you actually knew what the goal was of these football games, you might still be playing right now.
It was like, now I look back on
how did you survive 10 years in the league without knowing what the goal of a football game was?
I look back on my entire athletic career and I wonder, is that what kept me from going 16-0 every single year?
You didn't know.
I'm going to write a letter to Dom Capers and be like, Coach, I think I've stumbled upon.
I figured out what happened in 2005.
Yes, it was. This is the whole thing.
Yeah.
We were focused on all these other things.
Yeah.
We're focused on ball security and calling different plays and everything. It's really all about winning, it turns out.
You're supposed to win the football game. Yeah. That was Jerry Jones. My favorite part of that is like losing, losing, losing. I'm not trying to be funny. Well, you are being very funny right now.
Jerry Jones is the chief example of why I think sometimes people clamor to hear more from their owners. I've never understood that. I've never understood why people want to hear more from their owners. The owners are like children, better seen than heard. I'd like to see them up in the box looking regal, almost like a king in the Middle Ages.
Right.
Just intimidate me with your wealth and stature.
Wave to the crowd.
Yes.
Have three women behind you dropping rose petals and things like that.
But yeah. I don't need to hear from Jerry Jones all the time. Well, I mean, I personally do. But if I were a Cowboys fan.
That's why I wanted a clarification. Yeah. Okay, so you're saying a fan of a team doesn't want to hear from their owners.
Right.
My guess is the fans of all 31 other teams are loving listening to Jerry Jones right now.
Well, how the hell else are they going to know how to get to the playoffs? they think it's a roll of the dice. You got to win the game, Sean.
Why is he giving up these trade secrets to all 31 other teams?
I know.
Jerry Jones has cracked the code, and it's to win the football game. Yeah. You must win the football game.
It's losing, losing, losing.
Yeah, no, it's winning the football game is what that is.
You've heard more from Jim Crane than we used to. We don't hear much from Cal McNair, and as I stated, I'm fine with that. We don't
Tillman Fertitta.
We've heard a good amount. And I think most of us Rockets fans would probably prefer to hear a little less of Tillman Fertitta. Right?
The one's not in radio.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think the diehard Rocket fans who are completely invested in making sure the team is like feeling like everything is sort of in order and whatnot.
Yeah.
Although Tillman is kind of, I think Tillman has had some realizations in his first year as an owner.
Yeah.
That you can't run an NBA team the same way you run your regular business. And when anytime there's a fire, you can't just call the media over and say, here's what my thoughts are and everything. I think he's learned from that.
Well, he talked about that. Yeah. He's actually talked about how he realized the intense scrutiny that every little word has. So when you get up and you talk, it's going to be dissected on radio and in print for the next week. So yeah, I think he gets that.
He's the closest thing we have to Jerry Jones in this town. If that's where you're going with that, he's the closest thing we have to that
for now. And I think that might change a little bit. Well, is Mark Cuban the happy medium? I know he's annoying to people outside of Dallas. I wonder how people in Dallas feel about Mark Cuban.
I bet they like him.
Yeah.
He brought a championship to the town. He does everything they can to win. He's rebuilt the team.
Yeah.
At least he's been rebuilt on his watch.
Well, I think they like Jerry, but I think they probably wish he would talk
like
less.
His act.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see where Cuban might be annoying with all the, you know, just the tight t-shirts and the jeans jumping around like a fanboy on the baseline. I can see where in certain time, if that feels like one of those things that when they're losing, it's really annoying. And when they're winning, you go, yeah, that's our owner over there.
I wonder how Clippers
players. But I'm not totally sure.
I wonder how Clippers players feel about Ballmer. Because I always get the sense those guys look a little uncomfortable around him when he gets all amped up and going and sweaty and everything.
I bet they like him, though.
You think so?
Yeah, I bet he's a player's owner kind of thing. Plus, think of who's owning the team before him.
I bet he's a little bit like Jerry Buss. I bet he has some killer parties.
Not
the playboy that Jerry Buss was, but I bet he has some killer parties.
You can't have those types of parties anymore as an NBA owner like Buss did back in the 70s.
Is there anybody? I wonder if Jordan. Yeah, Jordan doesn't hang out with his players that way.
No.
If anything, Jordan like kind of. It seems like he kind of keeps a distance.
Yeah. All right, we're getting Ross Tucker on the phone so we can talk to him about the Texans and Patriots, Texans and Broncos, Jerry Jones. You want to ask him about James Harden and the dunk?
Well, I don't know if I'll ask him. I feel like I don't know. I don't want to hear from anybody outside of Houston about James Harden anymore. I just say you feel like you anticipate. I don't feel like getting into that discussion.
Okay. All right.
Do we have him already?
We do. We've got him right here on the hotline. He is our
Now he heard me saying that I don't want to talk about
radio.com.
the first damn thing he's going to say.
radio.com sports NFL insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at indeed.com/hire. Ross, it is great to have you as always. The first question, most important question, are you buying your wife a Peloton for Christmas?
No, I'm not. I don't really understand, the big uproar around it, right? I mean, it all depends on how well you know your wife. Like, you would know if she's into working out and she wants something like that and would enjoy it. versus if, you know, it was pretty clear you were buying it to send her a message. That's totally different. I think people need to know their wives a little bit. Last year I actually got my wife like yoga classes it's not like an appearance thing. It's just like a stress relief thing. And my wife's type of person that, it's like she won't take the, I don't want to say she's not a self-starter because she absolutely is. She wouldn't take the initiative to find out where there were yoga classes to take them. But if she got them, she would absolutely do them, if that makes sense. So she was appreciative of it and she did it. So I don't know. We're still married. I didn't get divorced. Everybody's acting like the Peloton thing is like guaranteed divorce. I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, you know what it is I think a lot of people had either funny tweets or criticism, or maybe it irked them a little bit. But when the normal news picks it up, they treat it like, oh, wow, outrage, controversy. Yeah. I had a tweet, Ross, that was added to a Reuters article and read by this news lady like it was a super serious tweet, where I was just making a funny hostage video joke.
Do you want to hear the news lady reading the tweet? We have the audio, right?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Another said, "I'd ask that woman in the Peloton commercial to blink twice if she needs help, but her husband already Botoxed her eyelids for her birthday."
sounds different in the serious voice, doesn't it?
That is amazing. You know what? It's funny though. Like, it's hilarious to me that is the commercial everybody's worked up about. I mean, this is the second year in a row they're running the commercial where the daughter, and maybe this hits home to me because I have two daughters, but the daughter burns the duck, and you think the dad's like in the room with her, but he's really on the Alexa or whatever it's called, right? The video thing.
Yeah.
And they gotta chop up some spaghetti, and then he's like, "What's his name?" And she's like, "Dad." And then she goes, "Alexa, hang up," or whatever. Like, wait a minute. You just burnt it. First of all, he should not stay with you anyway if you're trying to make him duck. I mean, if I went over to a girl's house for a date and she cooked me duck, I'd be like, yeah, this is probably not going to be a real good long-term thing.
I mean, I'll eat your duck and all, but this is it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm here now, so I'll eat the duck. I don't think we're on the same page if you're the type of person that cooks duck at your house.
Ross, I can see you starting the date out like that, too. Like, listen, the duck's okay and all, but this is not going to be good. Just let me finish my duck and get the hell out of here.
Let me just tell you something. Like, I'm here now, so I'm going to eat the duck, but just so you know, I'm not the type of person that dates someone that makes duck in their own house, okay?
Oh, classic.
You need to know that. And then so she hangs up on him, and then the commercial right after that is the dude buying, you know, the two, I think it's GMCs. One's like a truck and one's an SUV. And his wife's like, "Oh, I love it. This is great." Like, dude, how about if you just bought one for her, she would have been happy with it, and then get yourself one later.
Yeah.
Like, you get two cars so that she gets a chance to, you know, pick hers. And by the way, I just got you a car, and you're going to take the one I wanted?
Yeah.
Are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
I mean, like, these commercials, the Peloton commercials, the least of our issues in society.
Well, good. I'm glad we broke it all down. Ross Tucker joining us for his weekly visit. All right, Ross, shifting gears, actual football. Is your biggest takeaway from the Texans' win over the Patriots more about the Patriots backsliding or about the Texans maybe kind of surging a bit and getting that signature win?
You know, I'm glad you positioned it that way, because I think it's just human nature, since the Patriots are such a national story and have been such a national story and will be. I mean, they're like the real America's team in terms of attention and scrutiny and everything, eyeballs when they play. And I think that was the focus after what happened, you know, last week. I think the conversation was about the Patriots and their issues. And maybe rightfully so, but I think you make a good point. I mean, the Texans scored four touchdowns Texans deserve a lot of credit. Nobody had really done that to the Patriots offense. And, you know, frankly, the Texans hadn't really been playing that well offensively. I mean, they scored 20 points against the Colts, 7 against the Ravens. So I think the Texans, Deshaun Watson, really just some of the creativity they had in the game plan. I think that the Texans offense should deserve a lot more credit and attention for what it's getting and what it did against the Patriots defense than they are, because there's so much of a focus on Brady and the Patriots offense.
Well, that's where I'm eager for this weekend, because the Patriots are playing the Chiefs. So obviously you're going to get a little bit more clarity on how the power rankings might go in the AFC right now. But who are the teams other than the Ravens that you're taking seriously in the AFC?
Well, first of all, I think the Ravens are the best team by a decent amount. But that doesn't mean they'll necessarily win it. I just think that they are. And we've talked about it before. We talked about it before they played the Texans. And Seth, you pointed out how the Texans had a good run defense.
Yeah,
and they got absolutely thrashed. Yeah. but I will say, I do think the Ravens are the best team by a decent amount. But I do think with the way the Patriots are playing, it does kind of give you a chance to open the window a little bit more for some teams, right? Like, you can almost envision a team maybe going there in the divisional round and winning against New England. So I think the Texans, primarily because of Deshaun Watson and what he does, I think that you have to take them seriously. I think you have to take the Chiefs seriously. They've actually won a couple games recently without Patrick Mahomes being a total freak show. So I think you have to take them seriously a little bit. I think the Titans have done enough that you have to think, you know what? I mean, there have been stranger things that have happened than the Titans, or a team like the Titans, finding a way to win a couple playoff games. So I'm kind of happy about it. I know everybody down there is, because the Texans actually feel like they have a chance now. But I'm happy about it because, you know, for a while it was, let's just fast forward to the AFC Championship game, which was Chiefs and Patriots. Then it was, let's just fast forward to the AFC Championship game, which is Ravens-Patriots. Now it's like, you know what? Maybe somebody can beat the Patriots. I don't see a team beating the Ravens in the divisional round, but I also think these other teams are good enough that I'll give them a chance.
You know, and that's where it's interesting. You get into the playoffs, because we're talking about, okay, who can beat whom in the AFC playoffs. We saw the Ravens last week at least look like a mortal football team. They looked potentially beatable because the 49ers played them really tough. Usually you get into the late season, the bad weather, and you think, okay, running football teams have an advantage. But Lamar Jackson struggled to pass the football in those weather conditions. So we know he can run whenever he feels like it. We know that team can run. But could it be that despite being such an incredibly good running team, the Ravens actually might not be suited to playing in bad weather like some other teams?
Well, it's a good question. Number one, I think the teams need to start to take away Lamar Jackson when they run that zone read stuff and just let the running backs go. I don't mean let them go. I mean, obviously, but I'm saying the D-end should take the quarterback and everybody else should play the running back. Because, you know, when they try to do it with this scraping linebacker over the top, there's just too much space there, and he makes that guy miss. So, like, the guy that you had responsible for the quarterback can't make the tackle, and then you're really in trouble. That offense is utterly unstoppable when Jackson is hitting his throws. But, you know, he grew up in Florida, played at Louisville. Like, I don't know how much experience he has playing in poor weather conditions. And it's a lot easier to stop when he's not hitting his throws, because you can totally load up on the run, go man-to-man, take your chance there. When he's hitting his throws, I mean, because it is man-to-man, maybe a single high safety, it's just guys are so open that it becomes unstoppable. So, yeah, I think it does give him a chance, because it doesn't seem like he throws the ball as well. But he certainly didn't throw the ball as well against San Francisco as he had been.
It's Ross Tucker, our Radio.com Sports NFL insider and our Duck insider as well. The text message here sums it up best. Hey, Ross, don't anger Big Duck.
You know what, though, Seth, just to get back to your last question, you know, if you can just dial up freezing rain, like 30 degrees and freezing rain and windy,
yes,
that's the key.
That's
if
it.
You can make sure when you play the Ravens, make sure it's literally freezing rain with like strong wind,
yeah,
then that's the key.
No, you're with
and
me, and I know
still
Ross
by a Justin Tucker field goal.
No, I know you know this rule. Because you played in New England. This is what I noticed a long time ago. Freezing rain seems to be, or sometimes it'll be in the forecast as wintry mix. That's the one thing that crushes quarterbacks almost universally. They yeah. can't handle freezing rain.
I hate freezing rain. I liked it better when it was like snowing. I can remember we played the Cardinals one time. I was starting at center, and it was in Buffalo, and it was freezing rain. It's the worst. Like, my jersey almost started to, like, harden. You know, it was, like, cold and wet, and then it was starting to freeze. I don't know what it is. I think it has a lot of impact on the football, but it's awful.
Ross Tucker, Radio.com Sports NFL Insider. Insider calls brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at Indeed.com/hire. You can catch Ross every weekday on the Home and Home. Go to Radio.com/home or search Home on the Radio.com app. Ross, have a good show today, man. We appreciate the time as always.
But we got to talk about Jeb Bush too.
So I was over.
I'm serious.
Yeah, no, I know.
All right. It's not political. He weighed in on the Astros.
He did. It's in there.
Okay.
I was over at Texans yesterday. I had to get my weekly dosage of Romeo Crennel to inject into my veins.
Makes you feel good about it. Yeah. About life. Yeah.
The jolly uncle, Romeo Crennel.
You know what? We're joking, kind of. We're not really joking because that is true. And you think about the fact that he's been coaching in the NFL in a profession that seems to grind some otherwise hardened men up and spit them out. Romeo just takes it all in stride.
Yes.
He looks like he's having the time of his life. I would imagine he's going to – I imagine it's not like they're going to have to drag him out of the league because he seems like that would be too – he wouldn't want to be that unpleasant about it. But he's going to keep coaching until he doesn't have the opportunity to coach anymore.
Yeah. And when you go to the Thursday media sessions of the two coordinators and – Tim Kelly, I'm sure, is very good at his job and very intelligent and very smart. His answers compared to Romeo Crennel's answer, Tim Kelly may be an actual descendant of the Belichick family tree. Like, his answers are 7 seconds long each answer. Romeo Crennel will sit there and give you the history of football if you ask him about it.
We'll have to play the Stephen Belichick later, where Stephen Belichick, the defensive backs coach for the Patriots, who sounds exactly like his father.
No paternity test needed.
But
even though he doesn't look like him at all.
He was kind of pleasant. He kind of mumbles his way through speech and everything. So.
Yeah, he actually smiles, though. You actually know that Steve Belichick has teeth.
Yeah, so Tim Kelly doesn't necessarily give the most effusive answers.
Yeah, but Romeo Crennel does. And Romeo Crennel was asked by John McClain yesterday about his record against rookies. Romeo Crennel is 11-1 against rookies as the head coach of the Texans. Here's Romeo Crennel when asked to explain why that is.
Maybe they're rookies and I'm more experienced, but I do not play not one down against a rookie quarterback. I'm never on the field. It's my guys who kind of do the job, you know. And rookies, they are rookies, just like these rookies I got on my team. They're rookies, and they make rookie mistakes until they get experience, until they learn.
He's 11-1 against rookies, and some of them have been, you know, and there's a couple Mettenbergers in there from Mettenberger's rookie year.
11-1 with the Texans.
With the Texans. I mean, you got the two Minshew games this year. So some of them are rookies that don't have tremendous pedigree.
Well, and the Minshew, now it's interesting because he's 11-1, but this year, okay, one of those, that one loss was this year. And then the Minshew game, the first Minshew game, it was a little dicey there at the end. I felt like if the Jaguars hadn't been so Doug Marrone-like, if they had actually let Gardner Minshew play quarterback before the fourth quarter, I think there's a good chance the Jaguars win that
game. He might be 10-2 against rookies instead of 11-1. Yeah, and then they got him pretty good the second time around in London. They whatever adjustments they needed to make, they made. But Derek Carr in 2014, two Blake Bortles games. You know, I know Bortles has turned out to be what he is, but he was the third overall pick in that draft. They beat Jameis Winston the year he was the number one overall pick. Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold. Those were the first three quarterbacks taken last year. Romeo Crennel's defense beat all three of those quarterbacks. The only loss, ironically, is to the Patriots and Jacoby Brissett.
Mm-hmm.
The week three game where Brady was out on his Deflategate suspension. So 11-1 against rookies, and I don't know, you, Seth, you're a former defensive player. When you're scouting and you see it's a rookie on the other side, like, is that something that gets that gets the defensive folks licking their chops a little bit?
I think that, I mean, you smell blood in the water before there's even blood in the water. Yeah. Because you know, okay, versus any rookie quarterback, if you start to get him confused, especially if you get up in that game, then there's a really good chance to do something. I guess the flip side would be, it's kind of like getting in a fight with somebody that's smaller than you. You win, and that's what you're supposed to do.
True.
You lose, and it's, oh, what a punk. What a punk move.
That's what
you got beat.
Losing to Minshew would have been in week two.
Uh-huh.
Right? Yeah.
Right. Or losing to Kyle Allen, which they did.
Who
wasn't even a good quarterback in college, by the way. It's not like you're losing to a stud or anything. You're losing to a guy who couldn't even start in college.
He couldn't start. I was going to say he wasn't even good. I'm like, he wasn't even a starter.
Yeah, that's why people felt so bad about the Texans after that loss.
Yes.
Now, this is what the Texans' defense has been. It's transformed itself as the season has gone along. And in some ways, I actually feel better about this defense than when JJ was healthy. And it's not because... Please don't twist my words and say that, Seth said it's because JJ's gone. No, it's that they've improved on the back end.
Yeah.
So even when JJ was here and he was getting good pressure on the quarterback, at times it didn't matter because guys were uncovered downfield. JJ was getting really close to sacks and they'd still be completions. Now we actually see coverage sacks. We've seen Tom Brady hold on to the ball for 4 or 5 seconds with nobody open downfield. They've transformed themselves by some of these new additions and by a return to health that I actually feel better about them in many ways than I did before. And then likewise, when you're going against a rookie quarterback like Kyle Allen, you'd love to show him some pressure and confuse him a little bit. But when you couldn't cover on the back end, that's scary to do. It's scary to blitz when you can't cover on the back end. And then some rookie who does, sometimes rookies don't know any better and they're taking chances they shouldn't take. And all of a sudden they're crushing you. I don't worry about that with Drew Lock in this secondary with the Texans.
Drew Lock's only got one game to go off of on film. I asked Romeo Crennel yesterday, how do you scout somebody who you only have one game worth of film on?
Preseason, so you can kind of go back and you look at that. You can look at what he did in college a little bit to give you an overall view, give you an overall feel, what you might feel about him. But, you know, he's playing against different competition and those things. Even in the NFL preseason, it's different than the regular season, you know. And he was able to win the game last week. So that says a lot about him, his composure, his and use the weapons that he has.
Does Drew Lock scare you at all in this game, Seth?
I'm like Bill O'Brien. I'm scared of any NFL team. So it scares me. I saw him make some really nice throws in the first quarter, and then everything got a little bit shut down after that. What you get nervous about with any rookie quarterback is you still don't know exactly what he's capable of doing. And now with his second week in the program, are they opening up the playbook a little bit, or his second week as a starter? Will they open up the playbook a little bit? Do they install some things that they didn't have last week or that maybe they were waiting to put in, including anything that involves him running the ball? You know, he's not an incredible athlete, but he is like a 4.65 guy. He's pretty damn fast. He's his quarterbacks go. So there's all that. Because remember, that's what happened with Jacoby Brissett. Jacoby Brissett, you say, all right, we know him, and we don't think he's going to run a whole ton. And then all of a sudden, he ran all over the Texans.
Yeah.
And obviously, he can do when he was a rookie with the Patriots. So does he scare me? No, he doesn't scare me, but he makes me nervous because he's unknown.
Yeah. The Broncos, I mean, I guess they view Drew Lock as the future there. They used the second-round pick on him.
I don't think they look at him as the future.
You don't think so?
He's a second-round pick. I think he can play. I don't think anything he does in the next four games keeps them from drafting a quarterback if they see the red guy. That's what they
really
do. They keep drafting quarterbacks.
No, I know that. Well, that's the point I was about to make. Is they've shuffled all kinds of guys in and out of there since Peyton Manning's been good. They've had Trevor Siemian in there and Case Keenum last year. They traded for Flacco. They drafted Paxton Lynch.
Right. I mean, Paxton
they drafted
Lynch
Drew Lock.
When was Paxton Lynch?
2016.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. See, I've always been of the mind that if you draft a quarterback in the second round, feel free to draft a quarterback whenever you please after that.
Yeah, I think so. I think if Drew Lock in the last four games is good, then I do think maybe they view him that way. I think they view him that way enough to where they wouldn't use a first-round pick on a quarterback.
Yeah.
If he were good the last four games.
But if you really like a guy in the first round, I guess, maybe they see that. I'll tell you, I'm so down on any Denver quarterbacks right now and over the past decade. I was talking to a woman at dinner last night who's a Broncos fan, and she was talking about how the perception of Elway in Denver is you know, this guy's gone from a legend, and people still respect him as a legend on the playing field, but it's getting to be kind of a pain in the ass to deal with him as you're the guy in charge for the Broncos. Because this is, the Broncos have, there's nobody in charge of the Broncos right now. Because when Jim Boland,
at the very top,
it's there's a trust that's in charge,
right.
And the family's kind of jockeying for control, and it looks like one of the daughters, I think,
yes,
is gonna end up with control, but she doesn't necessarily have control right now. So it's just John Elway, who's been abysmal at actually picking quarterbacks who aren't Peyton Manning.
He's been abysmal at getting quarterbacks in any shape, form, or fashion. He was abysmal in drafting one in the first round. He was abysmal in trying to use one that was drafted in the later rounds. He was abysmal at getting a bridge guy in Keenum and signing him to a two-year deal.
He was going to sign Osweiler if the Texans hadn't been just a little bit more foolhardy.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
For all the money the Texans threw at him, the Broncos were going to throw, what, $5 million less at him, but still $35, $40 million, approaching $40 million guaranteed.
Right, somewhere in the same neighborhood as what the Texans gave to him. So it's been... Boy, I mean, you look at some of these quarterbacks they've had out there, and it's what the Texans were going through before Deshaun Watson got it. This is what teams go through when they're trying to find their quarterback.
But Cortland Sutton is the receiver that made them feel comfortable trading the Texans
Demaryius Thomas
to the Texans last year, and he's got a connection with Drew Lock, and so I'm not sleeping on them whatsoever. Am I scared of him, or do I think he's the franchise of the future, or do I predict greatness for him? I mean, I haven't seen anything that would suggest that. Maybe he takes off and throws four touchdowns a game over the next four games, and I'll be wrong. I don't get why they would necessarily hinge their future on it if something happens in the first round and there's a guy they really like.
Yeah. They're 4-8 now. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they're picking. Tua being banged up going into this draft kind of affects the calculus, I think, of how the urgency level on quarterbacks.
They're the perfect team to draft Tua. Because fine, give Drew Lock a year to see what he has. And then the other thing, too, is I think teams worry too much about artificially creating confidence in their quarterback. Like somehow they feel that, well, no, the team needs to look at him and respect him as the guy. Look, newsflash for you. They're not going to until he shows that he's really good. The Jacksonville Jaguars respect Gardner Minshew seemingly just fine. It's not because the team put some vote of confidence in him or anything. It's up to that quarterback himself. I swear, teams treat these guys with kid gloves when, in actuality, if a quarterback is worth his salt, he doesn't need to be treated with
He'll
kid
earn
gloves.
It.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, fine, draft Tua. Yeah. Oh, no, the pressure. Screw the pressure.
Yeah.
If Drew Lock's actually a guy, it won't matter.
Yeah.
And then you can trade away Tua or do whatever you want.
Yep. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday, Sports Radio 610. So Romeo Crennel, 11-1 against rookies as head coach of the Texans. Makes me feel a little bit better about the game this week. I still don't know if I'm going to pick them to cover a 9-point spread, but nevertheless. The big crying sound that you heard around Houston yesterday, like in Star Wars when they blew up that planet and they said millions of voices cried out in terror and were suddenly silenced. Those were all the females around the city of Houston hearing about the Jake Mariznick trade.
Are you calling me a female? Because fine, so be it. I was devastated.
Maybe in a metaphorical sense.
Jake Mariznick is the athlete that I would have envisioned myself to be. Like
flowing locks,
good looking,
slender,
just kind of with like a daring do, where just reckless, like throws his body all over the
devil
place
may care
without abandon. Every now and then, maybe we wished his judgment would have been a little bit better at home plate.
Yeah.
Didn't hurt me personally, and he's the kind of player, absent the actual skill at Major League Baseball, he's exactly who I'd want to be.
He was traded to the Mets yesterday, if you haven't heard the news, and he was traded for two fairly low-level prospects. Neither of the guys, there's a left-handed pitcher and a young outfielder that were traded here, and they're neither of them in the top 30 prospects in the Mets organization.
This is what I worry about for Jake Mariznick, because he is one of my favorite players. He is now in my pantheon of current professional athletes who used to play for Houston, who I love because of their hustle and determination. There's Pat Beverly. There's Jake Mariznick. Who would I be missing on the Texans for that? Who's a hustle guy?
Hustle and grind on a Texans.
Beverly and Mariznick. It's hard to equate that to somebody. I know a bunch of people will just say Simon just because he's a white dude, but no, just because you're
what
white.
What about any of the lunch pail crew?
What about the
readers and the Blacksons of the world?
They're not. They're currently with the Texans.
Oh, you mean former? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you say former. Yeah, guys who've departed.
So this is what I would worry about with Mariznick. because we all love the way Mariznick plays the game, but he was also a guy who couldn't hit but was a great defensive player on a really good baseball team.
Yeah.
It's different if you're on a bad baseball team and you're a defensive guy who can't hit. I don't think he's going to be as beloved if they're going to depend on him, if he's going to be starting 80-plus games and not hitting all that well at the plate. I don't think he's going to necessarily get the reception there that he would here on a bad baseball team.
Kevin Walter.
Yeah. Oh, Kevin Walter. Yeah, but he's not currently with another team.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. I was looking up who they traded him for while you were laying out your criteria.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the guys that are elsewhere that when they come to town, even Beverly right now, I can tell. I'm like, all right, look, all this other stuff and anybody else was doing it, I'd be really annoyed with Beverly right now, but I can't because he's in this protection.
The Texans would tell you it's Alfred Blue. The Texans would tell you.
This is a good one for the text line. Texans 713-572-4610. A current NFL player who used to play for the Texans, who's like a Pat Beverly, Jake Mariznick hustle type guy.
Yeah.
Who am I missing? I can't think of anybody right now.
Yeah. All right. 713-572-4610.
I feel like it's because if that guy were on the Texans, Bill O'Brien would never let him go.
That's true. Yeah. People are sending in AJ Boye on the text line.
Oh, that's good. I never really thought of him as he's an upstart. He pulled himself up by his bootstraps.
He did.
Okay, let me think about that one.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.